asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's brand new Season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf-Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking raising financially savvy kids with Liz Frazier.
So longtime listeners will know that between the two of us, Joel and I have a total of 7 kids, and so we work to ensure that our topics here on the show relate to all of our listeners, not just those who have kids, but occasionally we do dive deep on a particular topic, and we're definitely going to do that today. We are joined by Liz Frazier, who is a fee-only certified financial planner, and she is also the author of Beyond Piggy Banks and Lemonade Stands, How to Teach Young Kids About Finance. And to get specific, it was when Liz was pregnant with her first of 3 children that she was setting up a 529 account. She's preparing her will. That is when everything clicked for her. That is when she realized that she wanted to be a financial planner because, like so many parents, she realized the overwhelming need to make sure her family was financially prepared. And raising children who are equipped with financial knowledge is an important part of that role as a parent. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. So Liz Frazier, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm so glad that you guys are focusing on this for this show.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and you're the right person to have, Liz. So we got a ton of questions for you on how to make sure as parents we're doing the right thing and making sure our kids grow up with some semblance of money knowledge because so many kids don't. But our first question for everybody that comes on the show is as our listeners know, Matt and I, we like to drink a beer on every episode. We like to splurge on tasty, expensive craft beer even sometimes while saving and investing well for the future. So I want to know for you, what's your splurge? What's your craft beer equivalent?
Oh, gosh, I love the craft beer one. You know, I have to say mine is organizational materials, organizing things for the house. And it's because I am completely deficient in that area. So I come home with bags and boxes and baskets and filing cabinets and all kinds of things to get me more organized because I am just sadly unorganized. I'm looking right now at a basket that actually is just holding baskets in it. And every time I leave the house, my husband asks, please don't come home with a basket. So that is my sad splurge.
Do they have like bonus credit cards, reward credit cards for the Container Store? Because if so, I feel like maybe you could get some serious cash back.
Right.
I could probably buy them out at this point. I could own the Container Store.
I love it. Liz, let's dive into the money talk here. Thank you for sharing all that, by the way. We want to know about your history with money. Did your parents talk about money well as you were growing up? You know, when you look back to your childhood, what does your financial education look like?
Well, it's funny. I had a really unique experience with finance as a kid because my mom is a financial planner. So my mom became a financial planner, in the 80s. So, you know, I was a child when she started her business. And, you know, I have to say, people have asked me before, wow, your mom is a financial planner. You know, she must have taught you so much about finance. And she did. I would hear her talking a lot about finance. And, you know, it was something that was definitely a topic in our house. But I think what really sticks out to me from my childhood experiences with money is just that we talked about it. You know, this was not something that was, I never grew up thinking that there was something scary or intimidating about money. It was just a regular conversation in our household. So there was never a specific lesson that I learned or specific, you know, thing that I can remember. I just know that it was part of the conversation. And I think that's so valuable.
Yeah, that seems to be one of the things that most kids don't grow up with, that, right? Where money's talked about, usually it's hidden, or usually they hear arguments from their parents. Like, that's how they're introduced to money. They're like, oh, money's a stressful thing. Oh, money makes people fight. So yeah, I guess, would you say that we should be having these conversations at the dinner table more often? And if so, do you have any tips when it comes to talking about getting granular about personal finance? Like, should you be like talking about your net worth with your kindergarten, or how do you kind of start those conversations?
I mean, my kindergartner, everybody's kid is different. My kindergartner is far less advanced financially than my daughter was when she was in kindergarten. So he would not know what a net worth is. you know, I'll tell you, I think that when it comes to talking about money, I want parents to look at it as if the same conversation that we have around nutrition or teamwork or kindness. You know, none of us really are perfect with these topics, and we're not sitting down and having really specific, you know, PowerPoint type lessons with our kids. We're just incorporating it in their daily lives. So, you know, I want parents to kind of think about talking financially along those same lines with their kids. So when it comes to dinner conversations, you know, I think it's okay just to say, hey, is there anything that you want to save up for with your piggy bank money that you have in your save jar? Or parents can also talk about successes that they've had. You know, it's okay for parents to talk about money from their own personal experience. So maybe it's, you know, maybe it's at the store and you say, well, God, I really want that new coat. But you know what? I spent a lot of money on shoes last week. So I think I'm going to prioritize that and not spend money on this. Or the opposite. I think I'm going to buy this coat today. But you know what? That means that I can't spend money on shoes next week. But that's okay, because I'd rather have this coat. But it's just things like that, just kind of incorporating it into the conversation with kids, you know, talking to them about even things that don't have to do with money, but that are the foundation of good money management, which is priorities and needs versus wants. You know, those are the two really the building blocks for understanding money management and being responsible. So that's something that we started with our kids really young. We talked to them about needs versus wants, you know, and we would make it fun with them, for them. Kids love answering questions, you know, that are kind of weird and random. And so we would say, you know, is this considered, what is ice cream? Is this a need or a want? You know, and of course, they were like, well, that's a need. But, you know, we'd have fun conversations with them and talk to them about how needs always come first, because you will die without needs. And wants, they're great, but they come after needs. And then, you know, even further with that, we'd talk about our wants. And, you know, we would make a list and we'd say, okay, I would list out 10 things with my kids, and I would make it fun. You know, number one, brownies. Number two, your brother. Three, dirt. Four, your mom. You know, and go through a list of 10 things. And I'd say, I want you to put this in order of your favorite to your least favorite. And, you know, sometimes the brother came after dirt, you know, it just depends on the day. But, and I would tell them, this is your priorities. This is what's most important to you. So if you could buy five things, if you have five things you want to buy, but you can only buy one, you have to prioritize and think about which one you can buy. You can't buy all of it. So these are just kind of easy ways to talk about money and to start incorporating it into the conversation. It doesn't, there's no perfect conversation or lesson to give them. It's just talking, just chatting about it, making it not so intimidating.
Yeah, I like that. I often hear on the show, we kind of do a little game, I guess, if you want to call it a game, but it's frugal or cheap. And we often try to determine whether we're actually being total cheapskates and if that's going to end up biting us in the butt. But I like the idea of making this a game with the kids. Like, is this a need or is this a want? And it helps them to kind of start prioritizing, at least mentally, for them to help realize what they want to spend their money on. So I love that you've made this a fun thing for them, Liz. But it is good to make it practical, you know, by modeling with our own behavior. But what about just kind of making this more of an actual lesson? Like, is there a place kind of for verbal instruction and, you know, the sort of formal process of teaching them a lesson? You know, like, how do we go about codifying these games and real life examples into solid lessons that actually stick with them?
Sure. Yeah. So I think that, you know, you can kind of put this into two parts. I mean, when you say lessons, I think that kids at any age, and this goes for adults too, they just don't really absorb a lot through lessons. They absorb through interaction, through making it relative to them and fun. So, you know, for kids, it's going to be more about games that bring lessons to life. So a really good example of this is a pretend store. You know, if you're using, you can get all the toys in your house and make it a pretend store for your kids and have them come up and, you know, they have to, you've got a store owner and you've got a buyer, and the store owner comes up with the prices and the buyer has money and the buyer comes in and says what they want. And these kind of lessons, you know, these develop naturally into lessons where you say, so when you go into a store and you only have enough this much money, you have to choose what you're going to buy, and then you're going to get changed from that. And just talking about the logistics of it. Another one, which is just the classic money management activity, is a lemonade stand. You know, this is, or a bake sale, or it could be anything like that. But this is a way that, you know, you're teaching your kids about working, that you have to work to make money, that once you know, that you have to buy materials first. So there's, you know, this cost of goods type lesson. So those kind of lessons can be incorporated in these activities.
Liz, what would you say to parents who are saying, like, hey, I'm like literally just getting the ball rolling with my own personal finances. I'm trying to kind of figure things out on the fly. And so I'm not sure I have the confidence to be able to, you know, teach my kid and bring them along and kind of help them figure out the nuts and bolts of personal finance, because I'm not sure I understand them myself and they're nervous. Like, yeah, what would you say to that parent?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, I would say the same thing to a nutritionist telling me to talk to my kids about getting enough protein. You know, none of us, no parent feels like they're on the ball really with anything. I mean, I think that's the definition of parenthood. So, right. You know, parents.
I like how you said with anything, because you're right. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And I'm like kind of making it up as I go along.
Right. That's all we're doing. We're all just making it up. So when it comes to finances, parents know so much more than they think they do. They do not have to be in a, you know, in their ideal place financially for them to understand the basics. They every day make spending decisions. They every day, whether they have a budget or not, they understand that they're budgeting. You know, they understand the importance of saving. Whether they practice it or not is a different story, but they do understand the importance of avoiding debt. So there's a couple things that, you know, that they're practicing every day just by being a parent, just by running a household, you know, or working. They understand that they have to work to make money. So you really don't have to have some sophisticated knowledge of Bitcoin and the market to start incorporating these kind of ideas to your kids. So I would say to parents, don't worry about it. Don't worry until you have it perfect, because you never will. I don't have it perfect. Nobody has it perfect. Just start talking to them and you have experience on your side.
And when it comes to the different ages of kids, as we, you know, start talking through these money lessons, Liz, like, our kids range in age from 2 to 8. Obviously, the 8-year-olds are able to grasp a whole lot more. I feel like I'm kind of starting to delve into investing a little bit with her. But I mean, below the age of 8, though, there's a wide range of ages. You know, when is too young to start, you know, trying to impart some of these lessons?
I mean, I think for parents, it's too young when you're overwhelmed with a toddler. You know, I mean, you're trying to make sure he has broccoli and you're changing diapers and, you know, all of this stuff. I mean, you really just can't put in, when you're in the weeds, you can't add in finance to that. I mean, we've all been there. You know, it depends on the kid. I mean, my daughter, when she was 5, she was really interested in money, and we would take out coins and I'd help her learn math and counting with the coins. So that's a great way just to kind of get them to start feeling money and understanding it. I would let her go into the store, and she, you know, starting at 5, maybe even 4, she wanted to pay the cashier, which was just a great way to get them to exposure and experience with money. My 5-year-old is completely on the other end of the spectrum. You know, he was eating coins at 4. I mean, he, you know, there's just, so for him, I know it's going to take a little bit longer. We have some other challenges we're working with on him. So, you know, I also don't want to set him up for failure, and I don't want to set up myself for failure. So for parents, they've got to really be realistic. There's no too early age or too old age to start talking about it, just as long as you start doing it.
I got to say, one other thing I can add to that, Liz, is I think you can play the How to Money podcast for your baby in the womb, or the audiobook, you know, of your book. Well, one of those two things, I think that's going to really help get them off.
Don't they have like speakers
right
out there that you can buy especially to like attach to your stomach?
There's got to be that.
I have a whole new market now for my book. It's pregnant women. Absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, you could go with classical music, or you could go with our podcast, which
that
I think
is
a better
awesome
choice. But we've got more questions for you, Liz, including we got to talk about allowances. We'll get into that right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah, and here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to PolicyGenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's PolicyGenius.com.
All right, we're back from the break, and again, we're speaking with Liz Frazier, and as we teased to before the break, allowances. So Liz, let's go ahead and ask the question, are you for allowances or are you against them? I feel like this is kind of like one of those polarizing issues when it comes to, at least to like money nerds who are also parents, maybe not everybody out there.
I am a huge allowance fan, and I okay. love the fact that there's this great debate among parents about allowances, because I think it just shows how much we overthink things when it comes to our kids and how
so much we care, right?
We care so much. Yeah, we care so much. So I think some people worry about giving an allowance and that's going to make their kids entitled. But I would say when it comes to allowance, it's the best tool for teaching your kids money management, because kids learn best when they're interacting with something, and this makes it tangible for them. And the best way for them to learn about money is to actually have money. And so with allowance, they're able to practice budgeting and money management and learning to save and learning how to give back. And also, most importantly, is they're able to learn mistakes. They make their own mistakes. And this is at a time when mistakes are not going to, you know, create any kind of lifelong consequences. So I think allowance is a really valuable tool for your kids.
So much of the debate comes down to whether your kid needs to work for the allowance that they're getting or whether you just hand them money. And I remember some kids on my block growing up, their parents would give them like $20 a week or something like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, and what do you do for this? And they were like, nothing really. And
I was
like, oh my goodness. And on the opposite end of the spectrum was me, where like, I feel like there was no allowance. Like, and I didn't, and chances to earn money were rare. Or I had to like,
Joel was on commission.
Yeah. Or I had to get on my entrepreneurial horse and, you know, go make some money in the neighborhood. So yeah, where do you side? Like, should it be work-based or should you just be giving your kid money for breathing?
So I actually think both and neither. There's a hybrid approach, which I really like when it comes to allowance. So, Okay. You know, the old traditional way of your kid does chores and they get paid for it, I'm not crazy about that one, because, you know, these are just things my kids should be doing anyway as part of the family. So, you know, one, I don't want them to think that they're going to get paid every time they put their toys up. And also, you know, if you pay your kid for chores, then they have the option to say, you know what, Mom, I don't need money this week, so I'm not going to empty the dishwasher. So I don't like
making... Wait a second, that wasn't part of the deal.
Right, this isn't a choice. So I don't like tying it to actual chores. They are part of our family and they're expected to do these chores. However, I do want them to have money each week, because I just look at it simply as a tool for them to learn money management. So I set it up like that with them. I don't tell them this is for chores. I don't even, you know, relate it to chores. I just say, guys, so you guys get an allowance every single week because I want you to learn about money and I want you to practice money management. So, you know, but I also like the theory behind the traditional allowance, where you do something and you get money. So I give them extra ways around the house to earn extra money. So they can still kind of think, okay, well, if I work, then I get money. So they're still kind of learning that concept also. So, you know, that's things that are above and beyond what I expect from them just as a child in this family. So that might be washing the dog or washing the windows or raking the leaves. It's something that it's not an everyday thing. It's maybe once a week, but it's a way for them to earn extra money.
Nice. And, you know, after your kids have earned the money, I feel like it can be maybe tough to help them to learn how best to spend it. And you kind of touched on this a little bit there before the break, but like, how active of a role should we play in directing where the money goes? For instance, I'm thinking of like, if your kid earns a bunch of money and then they want to go to the store the next time you're there together and they just end up blowing it on something really plasticky, really cheap, and it doesn't end up lasting more than a few uses. Like, how do you navigate those waters?
Yeah, I don't think that's an if situation. I think that's a when situation. Yeah. That's pretty much guaranteed. I think parents can set up the framework for their kids. So what we do and what I really like is the 3-jar system, which a lot of people have heard of. It's a save jar, a spend jar, and a give jar, a share jar. And what I tell my kids every time they get allowance and every time they get birthday or holiday money, that they need to split it between the three. And I explain to them what each one is. So the save jar is money that you're saving for something big. Your share jar is money that you want to use to help something or someone or your community or something that you care about to give back. And then your spend jar is money, I call it the Target fund. When we're at Target and you want, you know, some plastic toy that I know is going to break in 5 minutes and I'm not going to buy it for you, use your spend jar. So, you know, that's the framework that I set up for them. And I expect them every time they get any money to put it across the three jars. But that's pretty much as far as I think we should go as parents, because again, we want them to learn on their own. So, you know, in terms of how much money they put in each one, I let them decide. But it's interesting. They actually naturally kind of split it up into the three, because first, kids like to have rules and they want to, you know, make their parents proud and do the right thing. So at this age, they're still kind of like, okay, well, I guess I should put a little bit in each one. And then when it comes to those buying decisions, I really let my kids have just full autonomy when it comes to using their spending money or what they want to save for. And, you know, I think as parents, what we can do is we can lead them a little bit just in terms of saying, okay, so you're interested in buying this stuffed animal that is going to fall apart in 2 days. Okay, so this is a decision. This is a money decision that you're making. So let's think about what the options are for this. You know, help them with the decision process. What are the options that you could do with this money? You can either buy this now, or you can wait and maybe you'll find something that you like better tomorrow, or you can just save it and spend it later. So you want to make sure that they know that they're making a decision. And if they decide, nope, which they will, no, I have to have this stuffed animal. This is my life. Then let them buy it. And, you know, help them after they buy it and they'll play with it for a little bit and it's inevitably going to break or fall apart. And then talk to them about the decision afterwards and how they're feeling, you know, and, oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, we are all shocked that that toy broke. You know, but yeah, maybe it's because it wasn't really made very well. And so next time, let's think a little bit more when we're buying something and make sure it's something that's going to last a bit longer so that you won't feel sad afterwards. But it's a good thing to let them make these mistakes.
Yeah, no, I like that. And yeah, gives them a sense of autonomy and control over the money as opposed to us controlling like what they do. What's your take, Liz, when it comes to saving? Like, I love the three-jar approach, but how do we get kids? And you said they're kind of naturally maybe geared towards putting money in each of the jars, but how do you get them excited? The spending part is the exciting part. And even giving money away, I feel like they can see maybe, like we've found a fun way like to sponsor a child in another country, and my kids get excited to like correspond with her. And so giving that money away, it's actually tangible. And so they don't mind doing that. But the saving part is the harder one, I think, to communicate to young kids. Is there a way to get them more excited in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, you're using the perfect word is excitement. You need to get them excited about it. So one way that I do it is I go ahead and make it tangible for them for the beginning. So for example, my daughter, you know, when we started the save jar, I said, okay, let's think about what we want to save for. And I knew, you know, I had an idea of things that she was interested in. So I kind of helped her a little bit. She decided she wanted to buy a Jasmine doll. So I said, okay, great, let's get a picture. So I got a picture of it. I put it on the save jar. So she always knew this is what I'm saving up for. I've got something at the end of this tunnel. And then we created, you know, those old school sales goals where there's the thermometer and you're coloring in when you're trying to reach a goal. So we created one of those for her.
Nice.
And it was really fun. Every time that she put money in there, we'd count it up. We would, you know, color a little bit more, showing that we were almost to our goal. But then we would also reward her at certain milestones. So for example, you know, once she hit $10, I said, okay, at $10, that means you get to choose the movie tonight, you know, or at $20, I said, once you hit $20, I'm going to, you know, give you an extra $5 at this. So creating milestones also adds that little bit of an excitement for her. And we celebrated it, you know, every time we were coloring it in, we were like, God, you're so much closer. This is great. Giving her positive reinforcement. And I think parents are hesitant to do that because they know that their kid is probably not going to want this Jasmine doll in a period of a month when it takes, you know, it takes that long to save up for it. But that's okay. You can always switch it out once they have $30 and they say, you know what, actually, I think I want a, you know, Xbox game. And say, okay, great. So that's going to cost this. Let's change our goal. We'll put a new picture on there and keep going. But When it comes to saving, the most important thing is building that habit and keeping it positive. You want them to be excited about it, and you want them to always think the rest of their lives, oh, I got money and I have to pay myself first. I just have to put it in savings, and it's not a thought after a while.
Yeah, I feel like you also got to teach them at some point the magic of eBay, how they can turn the things that they no longer want into more money.
Exactly.
That's true. Yeah, we've been doing a lot more eBaying around here recently. Liz, so you talked about excitement, right? And how that's just a key part of making savings something that they're pumped about. It's like spending comes easy. That's maybe how you make it happen with saving. Joel, you know, his kids get excited about giving their money away. I feel like you have a lot of great advice about helping just kids in general to be great when it comes to giving. And so how do we help our kids realize, you know, the impact for good that they can actually have with that money that they earn or money that they receive? Is it similar to what you just said? Is it getting them excited to do the giving? How do we make that connection with them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that starts just with conversations within your family about how lucky you are, you know, about how lucky we are that we have a home and we have food and we, you know, yes, you got presents for the holidays because, you know, we're very lucky that we have this. And for kids to understand that not everybody is so fortunate. And so, you know, it's a bigger conversation. But once your kids start understanding that other people don't have the things that you have, or that money can do good for animals or for whatever, you know, is in need, you know, kids are just naturally want to help people. They just naturally are caretakers. So, you know, it's not something that really takes, once you get started with them, it's not something that takes a lot of work to encourage this habit with them, you know, but every kid, you know, your child, and you know what's important to them. My son is obsessed with sharks. He just loves sharks and dinosaurs, but there's nothing we can do for the dinosaurs. So for sharks, we looked up to see
Sorry,
if there's
buddy.
Any
too late.
And he still doesn't accept that. But you know, so we looked up different organizations that are helping sharks, and we found those bracelets where those guys clean up the ocean and they use the trash from it to make the bracelets. And we found one that's dedicated to helping sharks. And so it
Super
was something
cool.
Just as simple as that. We put a picture on the share jar and we talk about it all the time. But you know, there's a lot of different ways that money can do good. And it just, kids are just natural givers. It doesn't take a lot for them to want to help others. Just look on the playground. You know, if a kid's crying, you see multiple kids going up there trying to help them.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, what I'm hearing you say is basically just being intentional. You know, like whether it's with savings goals, like you're talking about celebrating that, because I think sometimes with our fast paced life, we can just say, OK, cool, we got that. Let's just keep moving on. Like, what's the next big goal? Like onwards and upwards kind of mentality, as opposed to slowing down, like pausing for a second and recognizing. And I love what you said there too about just being lucky. And I mean, that's gratitude. That's just showing that, hey, we're fortunate, we are in a great position, and this is a way that we can reflect the good fortune that we've had and share it with others as well. I think that's, yeah, I love all the things here that you're saying.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, you know, we live in a world where really bad things happen, and we don't want to scare our kids about that. But something that we can do is, when, you know, if there's an earthquake and your kids see on the news that there's this earthquake and that it's just such a tragedy, what you can do is you can point out the people there who are helping, you know, and say, look at that group. They flew right out there to, you know, hand out water to the people who don't have water. And, you know, oh my gosh, that's amazing that your school immediately started this coat drive to get coats to these people who are facing this tragedy. So that's another way you can just introduce this idea of how they can help. You know, they can help with money, they can help with their time, is by pointing out when you see other people going to help.
Totally.
I want to talk about personality types, Liz, because you've kind of already mentioned how your kids are really different, and my kids, same thing, right? Like, I have to speak to them very differently in order to get to do a lot of things, or to try to teach them. They need to be reached in different ways. So how would you say that different personality types enter the equation? And yeah, what should parents keep in mind when it comes to raising multiple kids who are good with money? Because one size doesn't always fit all.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, my daughter is really interested in money. She, you know, wanted to count it when she was young. My son does not care about money. And as a financial planner, and literally somebody who wrote the book on money and kids, it makes me nuts that he's not interested in it. But it's like anything else. You can't push them, or else they're going to be just push you away and be less interested in it than they are. But you can find different ways to reach them kind of sneaking it in. You know, it's like sneaking kale into a chocolate shake. So, you know, with my daughter, I can just outright talk to her about money, and she's interested in it and she wants to learn about it. With my son, I have to be a little bit sneakier. So that's where the games come in. You know, we'll try Monopoly, or, you know, we've done yard sales, or, you know, doing the store game in the house. He's also very independent. So he likes feeling like the big kid because he's the youngest. So I, you know, when we go to the store, I'll say, Owen, do you want to go up and pay for this by yourself? I'll stand towards the back. And he's like, yes. You know, and he doesn't realize maybe that he's being taught about it and that it has something to do with finance. Because if I say the word finance, he is gone. You know, he is a mile away. So I think it's really just sneaking it in there when you can in a way that your kids will respond to it.
That's great. Liz, you know, we've kind of talked here about some foundational concepts when it comes to raising financially savvy kids. But after the break, we're going to talk about some more complex concepts, and we'll get to all of those right after the break.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast, and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch. They make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. betterment.com.
All right, we're back from the break. Still talking about raising kids who know how to handle money well. Liz, let's get to the hard-hitting questions here. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
They're not that hard-hitting. It's like the questions before, but just different.
Okay, all right. I was kind of, you guys have
been pretty intimidating, so yeah. I'm ready.
That's what everyone says.
There's no hot seat or anything. Right.
Well, I want to talk about entrepreneurship for a second, because the name of your book, it invokes the old school lemonade stand, right? Like, I remember setting one of those up when I was a kid. I feel like almost every kid has some sort of recollection of doing something like that, and they have some sort of like miniature entrepreneurship story. So yeah, as parents, like, should we be encouraging that startup mindset more than we do? It seems like that's, I don't know, it seems like it's less a thing today than it was when we were growing up.
Absolutely. I think that it's part entrepreneurship, but it's also part just giving your kids the opportunity to earn money. And I would have my kids working at the Gap at 6 if I could. I think it's so great when
I'm
going to
mark this down now. Liz is in favor of child labor.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you know what? Let's maybe scratch that part. but, you know, I do think it's so important for kids to be able to earn their own money. And obviously, when it's younger, you're not filling out applications at the Gap, but you can, you know, have them earn their own money and kind of learn these entrepreneurial skills by going to the neighbors and saying, hey, do you guys need your backyard raked this fall? I could come do it once a week, or, you know, doing dog walking or something like that in the neighborhood, and start small there, something that they can manage. But it gives them so many important lessons and sets up so many foundations for them. It's earning money, the importance of earning money. You know, it makes them more interested in their money because they earned it. You know, they've got a little skin in the game. It builds confidence. It makes them feel more independent. So there's, you know, it's not just about them having money. It's really all of the different lessons and qualities that it helps to build within your kids. But I think when they're younger, they can start just doing things around the house and around the neighborhood. But as they get older, whether it's a job, an actual part-time job someplace, or starting their own businesses, I mean, it's such a great opportunity for them to really have the full cycle of money management, which starts with earning money and ends with what you do with the money.
I love how you said that is going to give your kids confidence, because I feel like that is something that is kind of lacking in our, you know, when it comes to kids. Like, over the past 20 years, just in general, I feel like we've been putting more emphasis and more focus on college, which is sort of like this default track. In my mind, it feels less active and it feels a little more passive compared to entrepreneurship, which is something I feel that we are maybe seeing less of when it comes to our kids. So I like that you pointed out how it can be confidence boosting. And in the end, that means, you know, maybe kids taking more risks and being actually more entrepreneurial as they get older.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean not going to college necessarily,
sure,
right?
Exactly.
But, yeah.
But there are other options out there other than just like, all right, just do this one thing and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely,
we're finding out that isn't always the case anymore. That's what we're learning. Liz, earlier too, you mentioned the ability to make money just real and tangible to kids, how that's really important. But let's talk about credit cards. As our kids get older, like, you know, like, should we be ensuring that our kids learn how to use credit cards as well? Or, you know, should we just stick with cash? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I think when people, you know, think about kids and credit cards, they're thinking, well, it's really a digital economy now, so I don't want them using cash. They should learn how to use credit cards. But I think actually, you can learn the digital economy and digital payments with a debit card, or, you know, an app that's made for teenagers. You know, going to a credit card is really something that's very tricky, because that's not a habit that you want to build with them. You know, they could learn how to use a debit card in a similar way that you'd use a credit card. You want to use this responsibly. You need to make sure that you have the money to pay for this. But when it comes to credit cards, you know, some parents think that they should open up one when they're younger so that they learn about it, or that they can build credit. I see no reason for a teenager to ever have a credit card. What you want your kids to understand about credit cards is that if you're using a credit card, you can't afford it. I mean, that's just the gist of a credit card. And as they get older and get to college and when they get out of college, they are going to be the primary target for credit cards. So we should be teaching the opposite with our kids and credit cards, that if they need to use a credit card, it's okay to have one as long as you're able to pay it off every month. But this is not a default payment. This is not something that you should be really considering as a method of payment. Of course, most people do at some point, but it's not something you want them to be thinking about early on. But it is important to explain to them why they shouldn't have a credit card. I think it's okay to talk about credit cards and talk to them about, you know, if you're using a credit card, you're borrowing money. So on top of the money that you've already borrowed, you have to pay back, you have to pay back a fee. And that fee can get so high that it makes it impossible to ever pay off your credit cards, and how dangerous credit cards are. I mean, you know, financial problems are often caused by debt, which is credit cards are a large part of. And these can lead to not just financial issues, but emotional problems and physical issues, depression. I mean, it's really a pretty serious issue. So I think it's something that parents should be warning kids about for sure.
Gotcha. Yeah. And Liz, the longer we've been doing our show, How to Money, it's been about 4 years now, the more Matt and I, we've seen the need to discuss the more of the elements of behavioral finance, not just the nuts and bolts of how certain things work, like credit cards, right? But so, yeah, in your opinion, is it important for us to broach concepts like opportunity cost or confirmation bias with our kids? Obviously not with our two-year-olds, but as they get older, like, do we want to kind of talk about some of those like headier concepts?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, the biggest thing when I think about behavioral finance is your attitude around finance and your attitude around money. Because when you look in media today, money is the number one talked about issue in media. And so when you look in media, there's so many different messages around money. You know, some people look at the super wealthy that's always in the news and they feel envy towards them. Well, if I had that, I'd be happy. Other people look at money in the news or money in media or their friends or neighbors and they think, well, it's greedy to want money. Money is evil. It turns you, you know, into a bad person if you want too much of it. What people need to understand, and it's our job as parents to filter these messages so that kids can have a financial healthy attitude, is to talk to our kids about money as a tool. Money is not good or bad. It's just a green piece of paper that we use to barter. It's like cows, you know, before money was around. So it's just our barter system. So money is a tool, and it's a tool to be used to reach your goals. Money is not going to buy you happiness. However, money is really important, whether you like it or not. Money is an important part of our world today. And so, you know, money can be used to reach, you know, short-term goals like wanting to save up for something, or long-term goals like you want to have your own business at some point or you want to retire early. But they need to understand that money is a neutral concept. It is just a tool for them. And I think that's the most important part when it comes to really having a foundation for financially healthy attitudes.
All right, Liz, I got a slightly different question here for you. We all love our children, obviously. And I look ahead a little bit, I see the ability to help our kids save for retirement, right? Like specifically, say, you know, you got a 14, 15-year-old, they get their first job, they start earning money. You can help them to contribute to a Roth IRA and completely max that out, assuming that they have earned at least that much money, right? And so where do you stand when it comes to essentially making sure your kids are kind of set for like maybe the first 5 years that they have a job, you know, when they're under your roof, to where essentially, you know, by the time they hit retirement, if they were to not touch that money, you know, they're going to be millionaires. So first of all, do you think about that? And secondly, like, how do we find that balance between making sure that we're taking care of our kids financially and then taking other things into account as well, like making sure that they are working hard and making sure that they're not leading this entitled lifestyle?
I think that if you can get your kids to start saving for retirement at a young age, I mean, that's fantastic. That's everybody's dream, for your kids to actually really start saving for something that's going to have a positive effect on their life. But I don't want parents to feel like that's their expectation or that's the standard. I think that that's more of just, wow, you know, they started saving and it actually turned into something as they got older. You know, I think that really, if you're building these smart financial habits and if you're building the habit of saving at a young age, you're setting your kid up for success and they can do it on their own. You know, I think for parents, it's very hard for us to put ourselves first and to not help our kids financially. But there's things out there to help your kids. There's college loans. There's, you know, I mean, they're going to have the ability to work after college. The best thing that we can do for them is to set them up so that they can do it themselves.
Gotcha. Yeah, there was a in the How to Money Facebook group just the other day, there was somebody posted about saving for their kids' college. And they were like, my husband and I, we disagree. I kind of think that we should be prioritizing our own retirement. And he thinks we should be like maxing out their 529 accounts. And those are the kind of questions that parents wrestle with. But I like that approach. I think teaching them the skills that they need, and it's okay if you want to save or to help. But yeah, the biggest impact you can have is helping them understand the concepts of money, have that good approach to money. I think that's smart. When it comes to helping our kids, though, Liz, like plan for the cost of college, when it comes to helping them think about where they go to school and the amount of student loans they're going to take on, I feel like that's one place where, I don't know, the most recent generation of parents has in some ways kind of failed their kids, as we see the student loan crisis just continue to rise and escalate. And we see just people with massive levels of student loan debt that they can't handle. So how should we talk to our kids about like those trade-offs, do you think? Those are big trade-offs.
Gosh, they really are. And I'm so glad that people are starting to pay more attention to the student loan crisis. I think that in the past, like you said before, it's just been this automatic, well, you go to college after high school. You know, that's just what you do. And you don't really think about the financial implications of it. College is one of the biggest investments you're going to make in your life. And so it should be looked at the way that you would look at any other big purchase. You would never just go buy a car and not think about what you're going to get out of it and your reasons for buying it. And is it worth that much money? Same thing with colleges. You know, parents should first talk to their kids about the expense of college. And, you know, there are obviously parents there who can afford to buy, you know, to pay for their kids' full tuition at more expensive schools, but most can't. So, you know, it's important to talk to your kids that this is an investment. You know, talk to them about how much you can pay and how much they're going to have to take out in loans. And then let them make the decisions about, you know, how much finances should play into that. So if you've got three schools that you're looking at, one is really expensive and, you know, one is less expensive, show them, say, well, this is what we can pay. So you're going to be responsible for this. This is what it's going to look like when you graduate college and you have to repay your loans. So let's say you make, you know, this amount of money monthly. Well, automatically your loan is going to be taken out of that. And that's what you're going to have left. And, you know, it's our parents' responsibility to explain this to kids. Kids are coming out of school just being like, wait, what? Yeah. I have to pay these student loans? Now I've got hundreds of thousands of dollars. Well, yeah, I mean, that's our responsibility to explain to our kids. And, you know, also, I mean, when you think about what you want to, you know, most kids don't know what they want to do with their life, but some do. And if you wanted to be something that's really, when you get older, you know, you're not going to make a lot of money. It's your passion, you know, and you don't really care that much. Well, should you go to a really expensive school for that? Or maybe go to a school that's less expensive? You know, the expensive one is not always the right choice. You've got to think about how much you can spend, what you want to pay off later, and how much you're going to make afterwards.
I think that's so true. The thing is, I feel oftentimes students, as they're going off to college, like they know what they're signing up for from just like a dollar standpoint. But I think one of our roles as parents is to add color to that knowledge. Just like with kids, like earlier we're talking about giving money away. It's like, okay, cool. A kid's like, I will give some of my money away. But until you can connect that with reality, you know, in the case of your son, connecting that with a nonprofit or an organization that helps sharks, all of a sudden, oh, this is something that is way more real. And so I think, I mean, even just like thinking through, okay, if you have this much in student loans by the time you graduate, what is that going to look like? This is what this is going to mean. This is how your paycheck is going to be impacted. This is what car you're not going to be able to afford. I mean, just some of these real tangible things that just bring it to life.
I'll say I had zero idea, honestly, the amount of money I was going to take on as I went to school. That was one of those things where like, we didn't even have that discussion. Really? I didn't really know. It was like, where do you want to go to school? Was kind of the question that my parents. And I was like, well, I think I want to go here. And it was a private school. And so after the first 2 years, it kind of dawned on me, wait a second, I'm racking up student loan debt. And so I came back in state to get the rest of my education for free. But when, like, we never had that discussion. So some kids don't even know
that.
Aren't
getting that at all.
Yeah, they're not getting that at all. Like, so it's not even just the coloring, but it's like the, no, wait a second. You have to know that you're actually taking on student loan debt here. I didn't even realize that when I was 1718.
Let's definitely start with the black and white lines, and then we can start adding some of that color after the fact.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, parents, I often hear them say, well, I don't want to stress them out. You know, I don't want to stress them out thinking about their college loans. Well, I mean, they're going to come out with the college loans. That's just far more dangerous and, you know, debilitating, really, when you come out with that kind of loan. So we owe it to them. We owe them to understand how stressful it's going to be when they get out. And yeah, bring color into it. You know, set up a whole like simulation. Okay, so you get out of school and you work for this business and you're going to make $50,000 a year. And here's your apartment. And this is what you're going to pay here. And really like spell it out for them so they understand exactly what it means to them.
Yeah, this is what your life is likely going to look like.
You can stress them out like a little bit on the front end or a ton on the back end. And I'd prefer to, you know, go with the eyes wide open approach.
Totally.
So, Liz, this has been such a great conversation. So many good takeaways. And I think a lot of help for Matt and I as we parent seven kids separately in our own homes. And then for our listeners, too, who have children. So, Liz, where can our listeners find out more about your book and more about what you're up to?
Well, the book is called Beyond Piggy Banks and Lemonade Stands, How to Teach Young Kids About Finance, and you can find me on my website.
Awesome. Liz, thank you again for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
All right, Matt, that was a great combo. Liz wrote the book on how to help kids become financially savvy, and so many great insights, I think, for anybody who's like, all right, they feel woefully unprepared when it comes to helping their kids figure out money stuff. So yeah, what was your big takeaway from this combo?
Yeah, I mean, just overall, I'll say before I get specific, I just appreciate Liz's intentionality and just how proactive she, I mean, this is her background. She was raised by financial planners. It's literally in her blood. But I so appreciate her positive approach and just looking for ways to incorporate just some of these different lessons into her day-to-day to where her kids are going to be able to pick up on those things. But man, for me, I'll say that my one clear takeaway from this is to make it fun and exciting, regardless if we're talking about earning money, if we're talking about saving and investing, if we're talking about giving money away, but just finding ways to make it exciting for the kids. If it's fun, duh, they're going to be way more likely to do it. And it's something that if you were to ask me, hey, when it comes to finances and your kids, should it be fun or boring? Like, I would say fun, but if I look at what I have done, like there have been some small ways that I think I've worked to make it fun, but I can definitely make it more fun and exciting and just real, you know? Like, she talked about the needs or wants game. I love that so much. And it's just, I like little formulas like that where I can just take that principle and start incorporating it into our life when it comes to maybe stuff that the kids want, maybe things that we're looking at buying. Is this something that we need or is this something I just want? And with those things in mind, how do we make an informed decision? Because it's not just about teaching kids how to handle their money well, but it's, you know, when it comes to purchases and things like that, we want to make sure that these kids are savvy consumers as well. And that goes way beyond just understanding how money works. But that was my big takeaway. Make it fun and exciting. Play games like needs versus wants. What was your big takeaway?
Yeah, I like that one. I think my big one was when she said, you don't have to be a guru to help others. And I think there are a lot of parents that lack confidence that they know how to translate some of these concepts to their kids. But I think you're right. I think if you make it fun and you just realize, listen, I don't have to be perfect with money to teach my kids the basics, the most important things. Let's say you've never read a personal finance book and this is literally your first episode of listening to How to Money. That's okay. Like, not that it's not important to continue to grow your own personal finance knowledge, but you can really get started with your kids by talking about some of those basic building blocks that are basically universal in nature. I just think it's really helpful to be told that, especially by the lady who wrote the book on this concept. Like, hey, guess what? You can do it and you don't have to be a genius to do so. But Matt, let's get back to the beer that we had while we were talking to Liz.
Let's.
This one is called Pioneer ESB. It's by Bearlick Beer Company. This one was sent to us by listener Brandon. Thank you, Brandon. And Matt, what were your thoughts on this beer?
First of all, yeah, I mean, I'll say, Brandon, kudos to you for getting this to us as soon as humanly possible. I think it was canned like the week or just even days before he picked them up to send our way. And we're actually enjoying this barely 3 weeks from the time that it was canned, which is amazing. That is why it has what I will call that tingly sensation. When you drink some of these fresh hot beers, I believe the best way to describe it is that it is a beer that's still alive. It feels like it's in the can and it's still evolving and changing. And when you drink it, it feels like it's still squirming around a little bit, which is a weird image. But man, this is a delicious beer. So it was an ESB, which means it's an extra special bitter. I honestly don't know a ton about ESBs, do you?
No, I don't, yeah. But this was delicious.
Yeah, it's fresh hop, so it's got those hoppy flavors, but yeah. It's not like super hop forward like an IPA.
You said super tingly. I think the best way I can describe a fresh hop versus standard hopped beer, so fresh hops are literally the whole hops after they're harvested, but hops go bad, just like anything else. And so normally they have to be pelletized, and that's why you can make hoppy beers all year long. Mm-hmm. But these beers, fresh hop beers, are made with those fresh picked hops. Like, and so
right off the vine.
Yeah, it's like times of the essence making these beers. But the best way I can describe the difference is between like eating fresh veggies and frozen veggies.
Yeah.
So like I don't mind frozen broccoli, but fresh broccoli is better.
Oh, yeah.
And so yeah, I think that's
true, man.
And it's rare or just obviously, it's very limited time of year where you can get fresh hop beers, and this one was just a really good example. And yeah, it tasted freshy fresh. I really enjoyed it. So big thanks to Brandon for sending this one our way.
Yeah, it says on the can here, this is made with Mount Hood hops from Coleman Hop Farm. And so it's brewed and canned there in Portland, Oregon. So yeah, Joel, you and I, we're incredibly lucky to get our hands on these beers. Thanks again to Brandon for sending them our way.
No doubt. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. If you want show notes and a link to Liz's website, Liz's book, we'll put those on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And that's going to be it. So until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.